And we are now live.
Okay, welcome everyone to the Board of Directors regular meeting. Today is Wednesday, March 16th, 2022. It is now 4:30 p.m. and I'm gonna call this meeting to order. I expect this meeting to last 2 hours. Please take note to the Board of Directors that we do have a executive non-public session at the end of our meeting today. We will try and keep on the agenda so that we're still out within that 6:30 timeframe. So I'm just going to start with a roll call. So let's start with Gino Grimaldi.
Here.
Thanks, Gino. And Susan Cox.
Here.
Thanks, Susan. Pete Knox.
Here.
Thanks, Pete. Michelle Weber.
Here.
Thanks, Michelle. Don Norden.
Here.
Thanks, Don. And Emily Secord.
Here.
Thanks, Emily. For comments from the board president, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping today and make sure everyone has everything they need on their calendars. As we, Camille sent out a doodle poll earlier. Please make sure that you're responding to that. And if you have questions, let her know. We usually have a work session on the weeks. So we have a work session, week off, regular board meeting, week off, so on and so on. However, for April, things are a little different. So please make sure you have the following dates on your calendar, board members. So we do not have the work session on April 6th. However, on April 12th, we have our budget committee meeting at 5:30. Prior to that, there will be a special meeting from 4 to 5. So we have the special meeting, 4 to 5, 30-minute break. And then we go into the budget committee meeting from 5:30 to 7:30. And like normal, we actually have 2 days scheduled. So you'll see on the 12th and the 13th, 5:30 to 7:30 in case we need a second day. Does everyone have that on their calendar? Okay, awesome. That was pretty much it. That's all. I just want to make sure that everyone knew of kind of the differences and were aware that that was happening. So Mark, do you have any comments that you want to share?
Yeah, just quickly, and to piggyback on what you said, the April 12th will be an executive session to talk about the GM recruitment. At that point, we will maybe be looking at some resumes. And so, and then also, we're trying to get another date later in April where we'll actually talk about individual candidates and try to get that narrowed down. So Camille's working on that. So April and May will be busy months. So, but we'll give you as much warning as we can. And so then also in some of the reporting we're doing, the quarterly report, we used to do monthly reports on certain things. We've kind of combined them into a more comprehensive quarterly reports that are consistent with our strategic plan reporting. So if you know the packet doesn't look the same and you're missing these, the older reports we had, it was time to update those anyway. They've been around about 20 years and they were there was a lot of information, but it wasn't really useful. So we've created a more comprehensive plan on, and we'll report out quarterly. Another thing is the STF and STIF programs used to be separate. And the STF was a fund, state fund for elderly and disabled services. And STIF was a new program created through the 2017 bill that was more broad in the transportation service. They've combined those into one funding source. We're in the process of creating a committee that will deal with both of those. So just so you're aware. And then Emily sent some questions earlier in the week, and I think this is worth talking to the whole board about, and that is our department reports. Because you know, our question was, not every department does reports, and some do more comprehensive reports than others. And the dealer's reports is just give the board information. And so if nothing is really out of the usual, for instance, operations, they may not have a report or maintenance, but others that are doing more in the community, whatever we want the board to know about, they'll get those reports. So, and sometimes if we just don't have time to do oral reports at board meetings, we'll give more comprehensive reports and the written reports and the department reports. And so I know they're kind of inconsistent, but that's kind of what they're structured to do. So if you have any questions on that, you can certainly reach out to me. And with that, that's all I have.
You don't want to share anything about the APTA legislative conference where all the major transportation and legislative folks were?
I do actually. That was the other thing on my list. So I'm still on the East Coast, but APTA Legislative Conference ended yesterday, and it was a really great conference, able to connect with our legislatures and folks in Washington, D.C., along with other transit professionals that are, work in that realm. And so it was well worthwhile attending. And as I sent out last week, we did receive some funding for the Bus and Bus Facilities Grant with about $4.9 million to buy electric buses. And then Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley also put an earmark in for us for about $900,000 for a bus, another electric bus, and then another $600,000 for our mobile wallet project, which will help us create a seamless system for people using any mode of transportation within our area. And so it's really exciting. We fared really well in the last round of grants. And so, we're really encouraged to keep applying because the infrastructure bill passed and there's quite a bit of money out there for transit. So we will continue to apply for those grants to continue doing the good work we do. So thanks.
Thanks, Mark. And really quick, adding some color to that. I have to recognize Cosette, who helped prepare a script for my testimony for the Oregon Transportation Committee for the IIJA funds that would help allocate more funds locally into our community. So thank you, Cosette, for preparing that. And Rob Zako and I both had the opportunity to testify there. And then also, I have to also recognize Emily. I went to the city council or attended the city council meeting on Monday. And as I was reading through the packet, a lot of the public testimony and written comment, you see this little header that says, from Emily Secord to moving ahead staff. And there was like 15 of them. So Emily, thanks for being so diligent to making sure that the LTD staff were receiving every single written testimony and public comment that you're getting. So thumbs up. Thank you for that. Okay, great. Thanks for that, Mark. As a reminder to LTD staff and public watching that when we do our work sessions, that is the opportunity for board members to add anything that they'd like to see on the agenda. During our last work session, there was nothing that came up. So that's why there are no current additions to the agenda. But I do want to check if anyone has an announcement. Okay, not seeing any. So we'll just move on to our next part of our agenda, which is Employee of the Month. And we have Pat Walsh, who's here to share with us.
Thank you, Chair Vargas. Well, today is really a great day for me because we get to talk about one of the employees in marketing who is your Employee of the Month for this past month. Sarah Howe, our graphic designer, has been with the district for more than 5 years. Sarah consistently goes above and beyond to support the district's needs for visual communications. She's taken the initiative to lead our marketing department on a couple of projects that I really want to call your attention to. One is our budget and capital improvement project documents, and the other is that she has really led the charge for LTD district-wide to make sure that the materials that we create are ADA accessible. And we're doing that, and we're in the process of making sure that that happens district-wide. Sarah thinks outside the box. She works hard, and she's one of those people that brings a high level of expertise to her job every day, energy, and she understands the strategy behind what we're doing at LTD to keep our passengers informed and our taxpayers informed as well. I just want to share this quote with you from Teresa Brand, our marketing and outreach manager. She had this to say about Sarah specifically. She said, "Sarah has made a tremendous impact to the quality and professionalism of the district's visual communications, both in print and digitally. She always displays a commitment to excellence and is continually seeking best practices and additional training in order to develop the best products for the district. Sarah consistently exemplifies innovation, integrity, and respect in the performance of her duties. She is committed to sustainability and is always seeking ways to use the most efficient and cost-effective solutions when delivering visual communications products for the district. In recent months, as I mentioned, Sarah has been instrumental in the acquisition and soon use of ADA software, which will help the district make major leaps in the development of ADA accessible documents for our website and in other modes. So with that, I'd like to have you join me in congratulating Sarah Howe for a job well done and for being our employee of the month.
I can't wait to actually clap when we're all together and do woohoos and all of that. But Pat, please pass on our appreciation to Sarah. And
I will do it.
We really appreciate Teresa also contributing that quote and appreciate all the good work that's going on in the marketing department. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And one thing I wanted to mention too is how great the social media is looking for our Operator Appreciation Day this Friday. I see it far and wide, and I'm so excited that this community gets to celebrate our bus operators this Friday. So thanks for that. Thanks for just splashing it out there so we can celebrate the rock stars.
Thank you. I'll share that with the team.
All right. So let's go ahead and move on to our next agenda item. So we're clear, we kind of have something a little bit different today. So we have our normal audience participation. This is the opportunity for anyone to comment on whatever's going on with our agenda or general comments. If there are comments specific to the redistricting, those should be saved for the public hearing. Camille will go over that right now. So Camille, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Caitlin. I am showing one person indicating they would like to provide testimony. I will go ahead and read through the instructions to give anyone else a moment to get their hand up. To indicate that you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button. For those attending via phone only, press *9 on your phone to raise your hand. When it is your time to speak, your name will be called. For those attending via phone only, the last three digits of your phone number will be called out. Please state your name, city of residence, and who you are representing for the audio record. Once you have provided testimony, your hand will be lowered. Please do not raise your hand again. Only one opportunity to speak is provided. For those unable or not wanting to speak publicly, testimony may be provided via email at clerk@ltd.org. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per community member. A timer will be displayed on the screen and will beep when the 3 minutes is up. This public comment period is for general public comment, not for the public hearing, just as a reminder. And I have Rob Zako up to provide testimony. Rob, whenever you are ready.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can't see me, apparently. I'm Rob Zako, of course. I'm Executive Director of Better Eugene Springfield Transportation. Happy to be here this afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I want to speak, of course, about moving ahead on your agenda later this afternoon, and have three things to say. First, BEST and our partners urge you to adopt the staff recommendations on moving ahead. You saw the guest viewpoint that Alexis Biddle and Brittany Quick-Warner published in the Register Guard. We share with you more detailed comments with our updated analysis. I won't go over that in detail. I'll just say that over 2 years ago, BEST and our partners undertook a detailed analysis of moving ahead. We submitted 20 pages of testimony, sharing our thoughts on that. In brief, our conclusion at that time was to support what we called Enhanced Corridor Plus. Fast forward to today, 2.5 years later, a pandemic later, a war later, other things. And we've tweaked our recommendations. I would say that plus now includes MX on River Road, but we've been fairly consistent in our support for improvements in these corridors. And we urge you to support those from your staff. Thank you for that. Second, I want to thank your project team, your staff very much. This has been a long endeavor. I believe moving has been going on for 7 years. BEST has been involved in all that time, but you've seen your staff come and go, board members come and go. It's been a long haul. There are a lot of technical details. You've got a great staff, and we appreciate all the technical and engineering work they've done to get us to where we are. So thank you to your staff. Lastly, and we're not looking for thanks, but we just want to provide context. Monday night, the Eugene City Council voted 6-1 in favor of moving ahead. City Councilor Greg Evans would have voted in favor, but he had Zoom problems. And I think the mayor probably would have as well. So it's an 8-1 vote effectively. Compare that to 10 years ago when the West Eugene MX was incredibly controversial. And it was by no means a certainty that that would pass. The difference between then and now, I would have to say, is BEST and our partners have provided a moderating influence in our community. We worked really hard in the last few months to bring partners together to find sort of a middle ground, a middle road to agree with your staff of how to move forward. So if this feels like no drama, perhaps that's partly why. And lastly, I'd just like to say, because there's no doubt of the vote, I don't think this may seem anticlimactic, but moving has a really, really big deal. We're not talking about just one quarter. We're talking about four with the possibility of a fifth later on. We really should celebrate all the work that's gotten us to this point and look forward to a better future moving ahead. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob. Next up, we have Linda, and forgive me, Dugan, I believe is how we pronounce it. I apologize, Linda. I have done that more than once. You can go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Linda Dugan, and I live in Southeast Eugene. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Moving ahead, while only directly impacting my neighborhood with the 30th Street corridor, in general, needs to have more public input opportunity regarding any changes that would impact businesses, residences, parking, signage, trees, etc. More coordination is needed with disaster preparedness, need for frequency and size of buses. How will these changes impact the corridors for emergency vehicles, etc.? With the pandemic affecting bus ridership, do we know if EMX buses will be needed? With the impact of these larger buses on the roads, et cetera, when they may not be needed in terms of ridership, why not consider more frequent, regular size buses? Can you even purchase electric EMS buses? To make these decisions without more public input from businesses and these neighborhoods seems premature given the uncertainty of the ridership post-pandemic. Important to neighborhoods not in these corridors or those that are neighborhoods that are in those corridors, is not to lose neighborhood services as a result of money spent on changes in these corridors. We need to keep neighborhood bus services. to be able to connect to these corridors, et cetera. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Next up, we have Meta Maxwell. Meta, whenever you're ready.
Actually, it's not Meta Maxwell, it's Mark Osterloh. I personally went up and down all five of the corridors that are part of this Moving Ahead program, talked to people, knocked on the doors of residences and businesses, and told them what was going on, asking them to sign petitions, said they were opposed to this, that they had not been notified. Well over 95% of the people that I talked to knew nothing whatsoever about it, and were stunned to find out what were the plans, including taking away two lanes of traffic on River Road and having bus-only lanes that would be empty and having a lot of empty buses running up and down these lines. I only ran into one woman who had actually been talked to by anybody from either LTD or the city or part of the Moving Ahead project. And she was told that the people that talked to her said, oh, this is already a done deal. Don't stand in the way of the flow. They didn't really want input. They wanted to force her into submission. The plans at this point have basically been hidden from the public. They were done in 2017, but it wasn't until Meta asked to get plans on this and forced them to put them out there to the public that they were actually made available on the internet where you could go to that. Of course, the LTD had somebody else being responsible for the plans instead of LTD themselves. Very few people have actually seen those or knew what they were. And they are really stunned to see what's going to happen as far as businesses where the property is being taken away unnecessarily to do the plans, especially the EMX, which running that along River Road seems particularly ridiculous since they have some of the best pull-offs for buses anywhere in the city, and the distance between them is actually minimal. But the biggest problem with this is the plans have been hidden from people. When they say they've had engagement, they pull out little sheets that show a little line where the plan's going to be, small page. It's supposed to represent the whole corridor, when in fact it doesn't tell you anything. We urge you to go back and really involve all the people along these corridors that will be affected by the plans, which includes taking their property and affecting how the traffic congestion may actually be made worse by these plans. We urge you to not approve the plans at this point. Go back to the drawing board and have real, legitimate public input. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Caitlin, I am not showing anyone else indicating they would like to provide testimony, so I will hand it back to you.
Thanks, Camille, and thank you for everyone who took the time to be here tonight and provide public testimony. We appreciate it. So as we mentioned, we're going to move on to the public hearing first. Tiffany will have a staff presentation, and we will officially open the public hearing and see if there's any public testimony. So Tiffany, we'll wait for her. There she is. We're ready whenever you are.
Hi, everybody. Sorry, I missed what you said because I was being moved over, but I'm sure you are waiting for me. So good afternoon, board. I'm just going to be providing a quick introduction and an overview for our public hearing on LTD's sub-district redistricting today. This topic has been before you several times, and most recently on February 2nd at your work session, I provided a general overview of the process that LTD would be following for redistricting. Just kind of as a reminder to the board, as well as the listening, viewing audience, this process is conducted by the Secretary of State every 10 years. And it's really to account for the changes in population to ensure that LTD's 7 subdistricts are comprised of equal number of individuals. So the Secretary's office provided a framework for considerations and guidelines for LTD to engage the community for the purpose of providing the Secretary with a recommendation on a new subdistrict map, which she must adopt by June 30th, 2022. So since the last time I presented to you, LTD created a web page with detailed information on our process, on the criteria to be considered per the Secretary's rule. New proposed maps have been put up on that the website, and those were developed in partnership with LCOG, Lane Council of Governments. And then detailed changes were described on that page as well. And then information about how community members can provide feedback on those new proposed maps. This public hearing, which we're about to kick off, is one of those opportunities. In addition, folks can provide written testimony that we will be collecting through 5 p.m. on this Friday. And the reason for that is so that we can gather all of the input and then prepare a recommendation to you at your April board meeting. And at that time, we'll be asking you to vote on a recommendation to push forward to the Secretary by May 16th. So we worked internally to get the word out. We've noticed the public hearing through press releases, through direct correspondence, through social media posts, outreach to community organizations, interested parties groups, neighborhood groups, community leaders, and others who'd been part of our public engagement efforts. So with that, I'm just going to kick back over to, I believe, Caitlin, or maybe it's Camille, that's going to be just kind of going through the protocols. And if there are any folks who wish to speak on this issue, that this would be the time to do that.
So I will officially open the public hearing, and then Camille, can you just run through the instructions again?
Absolutely. Thank you, Caitlin. Okay, to indicate that you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button. For those attending via phone only, press *9 on your phone to raise your hand. When it is your time to speak, your name will be called. For those attending via phone only, the last 3 digits of your phone number will be called. Please state your name, city of residence, and who you are representing for the audio record. Once you have provided testimony, your hand will be lowered. Please do not raise your hand again. Only one opportunity to speak is provided. For those unable or not wanting to speak publicly, testimony may be provided via email at clerk@ltd.org. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per community member. A timer will be displayed on the screen and will beep when the 3 minutes is up. And I have Linda Dugan up to provide testimony. Linda, whenever you're ready.
Hello, my name is Linda Dugan and I live in Southeast Eugene. First, I want to thank our LTD representative, Don Norton. He has been responsive to our needs as our representative. While I appreciate his service as our representative, for the future redistricting, I would ask you to seriously consider, after Don's term is completed, having the South Eugene area be covered by a representative in the city of Eugene. Our needs sometimes differ from the rural areas in smaller towns in Lane County. Our neighborhood buses connect us to downtown, University of Oregon, Lane Community College, 4J schools, local businesses, hospitals, et cetera. Our concerns would be best served by representation in the metro area. As these decisions have impact for years to come, it seems appropriate to ask for this change now. Thank you for your consideration in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Linda. And Caitlin, I am not showing anyone else wishing to provide testimony, so I will hand it back to you.
Thanks, Camille. And thank you, Linda, for being part of the public hearing. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing. That concludes that. And now if any board members have comments or questions, now's the time to speak up. Go ahead, Don.
Well, I saw a letter from Linda or the Southeast group a little earlier, and I appreciate their concern. The thing I'm mostly concerned about is the way the district was drawn in Subdistrict 3, because it was annexed as a citizen involvement. We had to only vote in the cities of Cresswell and Cottage Grove, and therefore many, many people outside of the district are not represented. They're disenfranchised. I've talked with the county commissioner. It's very difficult to change the way the district boundaries are drawn unless the Secretary of State chose to do so. I'm not sure what procedure would be necessary, but they're all along Highway 99 and Sears Road and Dugan Road and Ham Road and Howe Road. There are many, many addresses out there that are not included in the district. And as you see, the districts are drawn around, the other areas, Vinita and Junction City, Oak Ridge and Florence and Marcolo were left out because of the same reason, as that at the time the district was being formed, these outlying communities were controlled by, you know, the timber companies, the mills that were there, and they didn't want to pay the tax. So the district was not drawn accordingly. And I don't know how that can be changed. And I would recommend, I guess, the Secretary of State look into this and see if there's any interest in this. Several years ago, when I was running as a state representative, I knocked on many of these doors and asked people about transportation services, and they would all be in favor of being in the district, but we didn't have a mechanism to do that. And I'm not sure we still have a mechanism to do that unless the Secretary of State decides to do that. And I'm assuming, because of the nature of the taxing, that there would be a lot of pushback and there would have to be a legislative action. So I'm just concerned about how many people were left out of the district because of the way it was formed in the 70s and the way we had to get service into South Lane County and even into West Lane County through these other mechanisms to get any service. Marcola is still not served, and Oak Ridge is minimally served. And this is part of that early process of 30 years ago. That's my comment on that.
Caitlin, if I can just briefly respond, I just want to be really clear to explain to the board and to anybody who's listening that this specific process that we are talking about and that we are undergoing right now, it's specific to redistricting our existing boundaries for the purposes of redistributing the populations so that they're equal. And so I know that this part of Don's subdistrict is not as heavily populated in order to comprise of its own subdistrict. So I just want to provide that little bit of context. You all will be deliberating once I go through everything and provide recommendations and really kind of try to go and explain a little bit more on that. But I want to make it really clear, this has nothing to do with your taxing district. Those boundaries are established by the legislature, and only the legislature can undo those. And so that would be something to take up with our legislative delegation, if that's something that they would want to do. And I believe because it's a taxing issue, it's not a simple majority vote. So it's I've heard that, and I know that that's a concern. And a couple of you have mentioned that. I just want to make it really clear that that is not what we're talking about doing in this process. So I apologize in case if there was any confusion over that, but it kind of happened before my time. So I appreciate the context, and I will leave it at that.
Don, is your hand up to respond? Don, you're on mute.
Well, in response to Linda Dugan's comment, as well as feeling like the sub-districts are not representing the areas, I had a thought years ago that perhaps these rural sub-districts, and you know, essentially the 90 routes, be compiled into one board seat, and then the other board members would do the metropolitan areas. As it is now, our 90 routes are separated, and you know, Gino has Springfield going out to Mackenzie Bridge, and you know, I guess Susan has Bonita, and Emily has, you know, Junction City, and so it was just a thought. And this kind of reorganization, I understand, is not going to happen. So it's just a comment. So anyway, that's enough.
Well, thanks for the comments, Don and Tiffany. Thanks for the clarification. I hope this conversation today will also kind of get us thinking about when we do come back in April for the deliberation, if you have any additional questions or what else needs to be discussed at that time. So any other comments and questions regarding the public testimony before we move on? Well, thank you, Tiffany, and we will see you again soon. So thank you so much for being here.
And I just wanted to say, Don, thanks for your comments, because it is helpful to get a little bit more context about what the scope of this project is and isn't. So thanks for that.
And as a reminder, everyone can reach out to Mark, who can loop Tiffany in if there's additional questions after this. All right. Thank you. So let's go ahead and move on to board member reports. Is there anyone that would like to share about committee meetings over the past month? Okay, go ahead, Susan.
I just report that the bylaws ad hoc committee met last week. And it's now, my understanding is that Andrea is now looking at the edits, and huge thanks to Camille for the back and forth that she did for us. And I think we're at a point where we are ready to look at a clean copy that we present and share with the full board for their comment and ultimately approval. Michelle or Emily, do you have anything to add?
We have an upcoming meeting that everyone's more than welcome to attend and share your feedback as well. If you'd like to have a little bit of a head start on that discussion, we'd love to have you there.
And I finished my review of those and have those back to Camille. I think you guys did a really, really nice job. So I think the board will be happy to see those.
Okay, any other comments? Let's see, contract committee, Lane Act, MPC, which Don and I are both present for that one. Don, go ahead.
Well, we heard the MPC thing on the flexible funding. I think it was $44 million. There was this question about which process we would use for selecting the protocol for spending that money. MPC approved the 2B, and also the Lane Act had the same discussion and approved that as well. There we have a presentation from the ODOT on that flexible funding spending, a pretty endeavor, a long presentation. And then there was a presentation on the Springfield Main Street Safety Project, which is, I guess, ODOT's taking the lead on doing the barriers in the middle of the street. And Springfield has now agreed, they're proceeding with that process. And I guess, I think Gino's on that Main Street observation program as well. He probably has more to say about that than I do, but that's from Lane Act.
Emily, go ahead.
I was just going to say the contract committee met on Monday and we had a really good conversation about the agenda item that is on your delegated authority report. Consent calendar. And we had a really good conversation about break even and efficiencies within the organization. And so we did pass it along for approval. So just wanted to let you know in the consent calendar, you will see that contract from Monday's meeting.
Well, that seems like a good segue to move to the consent calendar. I don't see any disagreement. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on. If there's any discussion, now would be the time to do so. If there's no discussion, then you can go ahead and offer a motion.
No one's up. Okay.
I'm toggling between screens and I think I finally have the motion here. So I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2022-03-16-013. It is hereby resolved that the consent calendar for March 16th, 2022 is approved as presented.
Second.
All right, thank you for making the motion, Emily, and providing the second, Michelle. So we will go through and take a vote. So let's do Pete Knox.
Yes.
Thanks, Pete. Gino Grimaldi.
Yes.
Thanks, Gino. Susan Cox.
Yes.
You, Susan. Michelle Weber.
Yes.
Thanks, Michelle. Emily Secord.
Yes.
Thanks. And Don Norden.
Aye.
I also vote aye, so that passes unanimously. Thank you. The next agenda item is moving ahead. So this is going to be discussion and a vote. So we're going to welcome over Andrew Martin and Rob Innerfeld. And I'm sure they're in this really fun Zoom transition world. So I'll give them just a second to hop on. So welcome, Rob, and welcome, Andrew. I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to you. We're looking like we're right on time in this agenda item. We have 15 minutes.
Great. Thank you. So just as a reminder, we talked about moving ahead at a joint work session on February 28th with Eugene City Council. And at that meeting, we presented recommendations from staff, but also the projects committees, which are the Moving Ahead Oversight Committee and the Strategic Planning Committee. All three of those recommendations were to adopt a locally preferred alternative of MX on River Road, enhanced corridor on Highway 99, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, on Coburg Road with additional study and design refinement, and no build on 30th Avenue to LCC. And I can report to you that on Monday, Eugene City Council voted to adopt that as their locally preferred alternative. So we are here tonight, after many years of work on moving ahead, to ask you all to adopt a locally preferred alternative for each of these corridors for the Moving Ahead project. And I've got Rob and Tom Schwetz with me as well, if you have any questions. We have talked about the project pretty extensively, I think, but we are happy to entertain any questions that you have before you can choose to take a vote.
Emily, and then Pete.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for joining us. I just wanted to get some clarity. We've had a lot of public comment about this topic recently. And will you just remind us that, you know, is this the final draft or is this just saying it's okay to continue exploring and doing additional public outreach to get a little bit more of a defined plan for each of these corridors? Could you just remind us what that looks like?
Sure. So to be really exact about what the decision you're making tonight is, we're asking you to select a locally preferred alternative, which is a key milestone in kind of the environmental review process. But the simple way to explain that is that we've been studying a number of alternatives. Most corridors had three. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard had two. And we're essentially narrowing the range of options for each of these streets that we want to study. It is not a final decision that leads to construction. And the process that comes after this is basically what you described. We need to take conceptual designs and we need to make those detailed. And then there will be another opportunity where you will get to vote on those final designs as part of the environmental review process, where we will have, you know, very specific answers to questions about things like street trees, property acquisitions, parking, all kinds of topics. Our next steps are to really study, make the detailed plans through public involvement, finish studying those detailed plans, and then we would be talking about that kind of final vote to do it or not.
Emily, do you have a follow-up question to that? Or does that answer what you were?
No, thank you. That's what I anticipated Andrew would say, but I just wanted that clarity because sometimes with a lot of public comment and a vote, it just feels a little bit like, do we have enough information or is this just sort of a check-in midway through the process to continue that work? And I just wanted to get that clarification. So thank you.
And that's a good question. You know, after our work session with City Council, I obviously stayed on and watched the meeting and was listening to all the public comment that goes to 10 p.m. at night. So we should consider ourselves lucky. You know, we are in that same boat. And then of course I watched the City Council meeting again this week, like I mentioned earlier. And what was interesting to me was there was one comment about moving ahead whenever that was 2 weeks ago. It was a favorable comment about adopting the staff recommendations. And then same with this week, there was only one or two favorable comments about recommending the staff recommendations for moving ahead. So I just kind of wanted to let everyone know the emails have been really helpful in the public comments, but it's also interesting to see the lack of public testimony, I would say, and how those have corresponded. I don't know, Andrew, Rob, do you have any feedback on kind of what we've been seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly have. I included some comments that we received kind of since the last time we gave you a batch of comments from the public hearing and after. Ones that we received prior to the packet deadline were included in this month's agenda item. We didn't do any summary like we have been doing before, just included the raw ones. I have received, I would say, I don't know, more than a dozen comments in the last week, I think. But over the lifetime of the project, I mean, this is a small sample, and I'll admit that the comments I've received in the past week have not been favorable towards the project. But overall, throughout the project, we've received over 1,000 comments throughout, I think, 3 or 4 different distinct public comment periods. So they're certainly included in our project record, and we will be maintaining those because we will be, as we go through future phases of the project, if you choose to adopt a locally preferred alternative, we will be considering all these comments and trying to incorporate those into the project. I'm not sure if that fully answers the question. We have so many comments over the years that it's hard to talk about all of them.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification, Andrew. Pete, go ahead.
Thanks, Caitlin. So this has now my third opportunity to vote on this. I voted on this as part of the strategic planning committee, and I've along with Susan represented at LTD on the oversight committee, which met in December, I believe, and then tonight's potential vote. And I've spent a lot of time talking to staff. They've were generous with their time as far as, you know, really giving us a chance to look at that, the detail. I've spent a lot of time looking at the detail. I've talked to members of the community and neighborhood leaders that are in neighborhoods that are going to be impacted by this. The long and short is that I believe that this is that the package we have before us is probably the best combination of things that we can come up with at this time. And we're 7 years in and things have changed. That's why 30th Avenue is not recommended to be a no build right now, because there are other existing projects that kind of overlap. and then the neighborhoods around the neighborhood leaders I've talked to with around River Road and Santa Clara have been, you know, they have talked to their neighborhood associations and the people that live there. They've gone to forums that have been put on by the city and the LTD. And they're very much in favor because they're looking at a major redesign of their entire zoning. The MX line out River Road would couple with that. The Coburg Road is just, it's a tough one. It's not really feasible for an MX line, in my opinion. I think a lot of people share that opinion because it's the growth that we've seen on that area has made it almost impossible to do without really truly destroying a lot of business properties and things like that. Highway 99, that's a growing area, but it's the investment. I'm not sure really investment in Foley MX is not really necessary, I think, but because of the way the relationship between where the residences live and the jobs and everything. So I'm going to be happy to vote for this package that we have before us. Thanks.
Thanks, Pete. That was really helpful. And I'll agree with you. This, you know, I haven't been in this conversation since 2015. I only hopped in 2019, and I've already seen things shift and be responsive. And I agree that I think we're just at a great place. So thank you so much for your comments, Pete. Do other board members wish to ask questions or provide any comments? Emily, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm excited that we're at this point, but I also have more reservations. You know, a lot of the public comment has really, really good and valid points about, you know, sort of life post-pandemic and what that looks like for ridership. And so I'm excited to continue exploring these topics, but I do feel like there's some other opportunities just to make sure we're getting enough public engagement and that we're, you know, really doing a thorough research job, which I know we will do.
Absolutely. And I would say thank you, Rob and Andrew, for actually including that on the locally preferred alternative in terms of requiring additional study and community engagement and making that part of that. So thank you. Any other comments? Well, we've been talking about this for a long time, lots of years. And so if we feel like we're ready, go ahead and make a motion. It is on page 16 of 32.
I move we approve resolution number 2022-03-16-015 of the locally preferred alternatives.
Can you, Don, you do me a favor, will you read the whole thing and then make sure you're saying as presented? The whole motion.
Okay. Whereas the city of Eugene and Lane Transit District have
Don, that part? I'm gonna have you back up one sentence where it says it's hereby resolved.
Okay, I see it. Is hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors adopts the locally preferred alternatives recommended by staff, the Strategic Planning Committee, and the Moving Ahead Oversight Committee as presented.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Don. All right, we're going to go ahead and take the vote. Let's start with Pete Knox.
Aye.
Oh, sorry, Emily.
Sorry, I just wanted to clarify that you got a second.
Oh, thank you. I'm so sorry about that. Thank you. So, and Emily, was that you providing the second?
Yes, I'll second that.
Okay, thank you so much. Sorry, thank you for that. Pete Knox.
Aye.
Thanks, Pete. Don Norden?
Aye.
Thanks, Don. Gino Grimaldi?
Yes.
Thank you, Gino. Michelle Weber?
Yes.
Thanks, Michelle. Susan Cox?
Aye.
Thanks, Susan. And Emily Secord?
Aye.
And I also vote aye, so that passes unanimously. Well, thank you, Rob and Andrew, for being here this evening. We want to just thank you as a board for all the time and the work that went into getting us to this place. And we anticipate great things moving ahead, and we're excited to see what happens next. So just a big thank you from the LTD Board of Directors.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And since we have 4 minutes left, Tom had asked me if he could say some words after we took a vote, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Andrew. And actually, I just wanted to, Andrew and I had a conversation with Gino last week, and I wanted to share some of what we talked about with the rest of the board, because I think it's good background. The decision you made tonight, well, really intermediate to more detailed analysis and outreach in the long run, is actually based on policymaking that's taken place over the last several decades. Beginning with the original work around regional BRT in the 1990s. And, you know, as that work was adopted into the regional transportation plan by the MPO, in the individual plans by Eugene, Springfield, and Lane County, and LTD, you know, that led Eugene to design its growth vision around those corridors. And that's what ended up being in what we are doing with Moving Ahead. So there's lots of decision making going on, and it seems like slow progress. But I just wanted to recognize that we're realizing a lot of the visions that folks have had for decades around how to match transit and land use and meet community goals. So thank you.
Thanks for that, Tom. All right, we're gonna go ahead and move on to our next agenda item. Tom, Rob, and Andrew, thank you again so much for being here this evening. Next up, we have City of Eugene Intersection Project Right-of-Way Easement. So it looks like Joe McCormick is joining us. We'll give him just a moment to get switched over. Hey, Joe, whenever you are ready, the floor is yours.
All right. I think all systems are go. And just a note, Kristen Denmark is joining us as well. This evening, we're requesting the Board of Directors to authorize the dedication of public right-of-way and temporary construction easements to the City of Eugene for planned improvements at the River Road and Hunsacker intersection, as previously discussed and reviewed at the Board's executive session last month. And I just realized I'm not showing you the picture of what I'm talking about. So let me just get that up for you real quick. Hope you see an aerial image of the property.
Yes.
Great, thanks. So just as a reminder for the board, in 2015, LTD purchased the 8-acre undeveloped lot at the corner of Green Lane and River Road to construct the Santa Clara Transit Station. And the Santa Clara Transit Station opened up for revenue service in February of 21. And the station itself encompasses about 3 acres, leaving 4.83 acres of surplus property. In 2019, the City of Eugene first approached LTD to discuss their intentions of moving forward with design efforts to improve safety at the Hunsacker and River Road intersection, as well as east of the intersection down Hunsacker Lane. The federally funded project focuses on intersection flow and safety for people walking, biking, and driving. The project addresses intersections and corridors identified in the City of Eugene's Vision Zero plan, as well as the River Road and Santa Clara neighborhood plan. And construction for this project is scheduled for later this spring and summer. This intersection project will construct a protected intersection, adding dedicated turn lanes and bike lanes on both the Irving and Hunsacker approaches and updating the existing traffic signal equipment. The project will widen the roadway and add bike lanes and left turn lanes on Irving and Hunsacker. And at the intersection of River Road and Irving, the project will upgrade sidewalks, sidewalk access ramps, traffic signal hardware, and phasing modifications. So in February of this year, the City of Eugene sent LTD an offer letter to purchase 8,008 square feet of land across four tax lots to accomplish the safety improvements along Hunsacker and at the intersection, as well as 4,338 square feet of land to use for staging of the construction project. The total amount of the offer was $170,600 based on an appraisal commissioned by the city. LTD hired an independent appraiser to review that offer and confirm the city's appraisal and offer for the requested acquisition is acceptable and it doesn't adversely impact the future development of the remainder of the property. So we are recommending to the board to approve the dedication of public right-of-way and temporary construction easement as presented and authorize the general manager to execute the appropriate transfer of property interest to the City of Eugene. So I'm happy to answer any questions you have. And again, Kristen is also here if you have questions for her.
Okay, not seeing any hands up at the moment. And just for clarification purposes, on page 19 is where you'll see those two considerations that Joe is asking. Emily, go ahead.
One comment, one question. Joe, thank you so much for the update. I know one of the comments that we were waiting to hear back from the appraisal process was to find out if that was going to impact the value of the rest of the property. So I was pleased to hear that's not going to be an issue. So thanks for that update. And Caitlin, for this motion, do you need that whole section to be read, including the two items that you just mentioned?
I believe so. So where it says proposed motion, you have to read one and two. Any other questions for Joe or Kristen? All right, if someone would like to make a motion, please feel free to do so.
Oh, Don has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Don.
Well, I was just going to make the motion since someone else can jump again. But so I move resolution of LTD adoption of resolution LTD resolution number 2022-03-16-016. It is hereby resolved that LTD Board of Directors, why is that twice? Approves the following: authorizing the dedication of a public right-of-way and temporary construction easements on tax lots 9100, 9101, 9200, and 9300 to the City of Eugene for total compensation to LTD for of $170,600, and authorizing the general manager to or designee to execute the dedication of public right-of-way and temporary construction easements consistent with the terms set forth herein.
Perfect. Thanks, Don. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Thanks, Gino. And let's go ahead and stop screen share while we do the vote, please. Perfect. All right. Let's start with Michelle Weber.
Yes.
Thanks, Michelle. Emily Secord?
Yes.
Thanks, Emily. Pete Knox?
Aye.
Thanks, Pete. Don Norden?
Aye.
Thanks. And Gino Grimaldi?
Yes.
And Susan Cox?
Yes.
And I also vote aye, so that passes unanimously. Thank you so much, Joe and Kristen, for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so we're gonna keep moving right along. Appreciate that. So we're actually gonna welcome back Tiffany to talk about the post-session state legislative recap. And then after that, we will have one more staff presentation by Cosette and Jake before we will move into our executive session. So Tiffany, welcome back.
Hello again, I'm back. I'm going to share a legislative update for you all following the adjournment of the short 35-day legislative session. As I mentioned in my pre-session briefing, that was a couple months ago in your regular board meeting, there were no bills introduced of any real significance or impacts to transit and specifically to LTD. There was one bill that was introduced that stood to have some potential impacts. That was a House Bill 4141, and that was a phase out of diesel bill. So it was a renewable diesel bill. And we certainly weren't in opposition of that bill or support. We just articulated a few impacts that could potentially be had by LTD based on supply and issues that we would have had because we currently use R99. So that was kind of the one bill for the session that we really ended up having to track more closely. The bill ended up being amended. It became a study bill. Then it was sent to Ways and Means where it died. However, in the budgeting process, the Department of Environmental Quality's budget that passed included what's called a budget note, which gives the agency basically a directive to essentially do some research and maybe do a little bit of internal study on the impacts and feasibility in a pathway that the legislature will likely look at a future date. So we're still tracking now. We're going to be watching what's happening with that. But that was, you know, for a short session, that's kind of to be expected. It wasn't a lot of action happening with transit and transportation. But I did think that I thought I would share with you some general updates just on some high level takeaways that I thought might be helpful. Couple of things. So the Capitol was open to the public, but most of the legislative business was done in a virtual or hybrid manner. And that's largely because there's construction happening right now on those hearing rooms. And so that construction is planned to continue through most of 2023. So the committees were conducted virtually, votes were on the floor, but still a lot of hybrid and Zooming happening. So I would think that we should expect things to look real similar for at least another full session, just based on the construction schedule. There was a notable turnover in the legislature, specifically with leadership. I mentioned this a bit on my pre-session update. A lot of new members, members who are running for other offices, members who have resigned or won't be returning otherwise, were announced, and we had additional announcements of resignations at the end of the session. So, looking at the 2023 session, full session for next year, where we will be seeing a majority of the legislature who has served less than 3 years, so over 60%, in fact. So it's going to be a real big challenge. That, in addition to all of the new leadership that has turned over in this past legislative session. So we're expecting a really big shift in the culture. And so nobody's really sure what that's going to look like, but there's just been kind of a lot of speculation and whatnot. The major bills of the session, there were a few of them that really kind of made the headlines. House Bill 4002, which was a farm worker overtime bill, it passed in a really partisan manner. It was highly contentious and divisive for the business and labor groups. I'm happy to kind of go into a little bit more detail on that bill, but I'll let you all tell me what you want. The state's economic outlook remained positive. So we've got a projected $964 million surplus, for the 23-25 biennium. We're likely to see Oregon's kicker kick. But the good news was a lot of investments were made to account for a lot of the shortfalls that were expected and realized in agency budgets and other means to deal with the pandemic impacts. There, with the passage of the multiple federal stimulus packages and the federal infrastructure bill, we saw a lot of money flow into Oregon. And so one of the legislature's role was to really kind of help distribute those dollars. And where they put those largely was job training, behavioral health, there were payments to low-income families, some new climate change initiatives. And then a lot of that money is actually going to rural communities, which, you know, a lot of the more, the rural legislators got to take away some wins for their district. So that was that was a positive. There's also funding allocated to increase homelessness and housing crisis efforts with some funding earmarked to specifically increase shelter capacity and some housing stability. So a lot of different programs were given a little boost of funding. The governor's top priority bill, which was Senate Bill 1545, it was called the Future Ready Oregon Bill. And it dedicated $200 million to create and expand programs to assist in workforce development in areas related to healthcare, manufacturing, and technology in particular. It left out some critical sectors, and there were definitely a few, like the transportation sector, that you know, was like, "How? What about us?" But essentially, it was seen as a positive, moving us in the right direction. And I think folks didn't want it, the perfect to be the enemy of a really good policy. And you know, maybe the next time around, we'll be able to kind of spread the wealth a little bit more. But there were some changes to campaign finance. There were some fixes to the Oregon tax code, corporate activities tax fixes to exempt prescription drugs. We saw, you know, Bi-Mart leave because of taxing impacts that they had seen with that. So there was a whole host of a lot of other non-transportation, non-transit related things. So I don't want to go into detail on all that because I think that we could be here a while, but I am happy to always, you know, be a resource and provide any kind of information you all are interested in. But I would like to just share one last thing, and that is election season is upon us. And so there's some interesting dynamics happening that I thought you might find interesting. So the Oregon gubernatorial race is the first time in about 20 years that we've had an open gubernatorial race. And we've got a number of strong decades or a number of strong candidates in that race. There's a lot of activity with the legislative races, as well as congressional races, because we've got a new congressional district and we have a very seasoned senior congressional member of Congress who is leaving us, and that would be Peter DeFazio. So that seat has drawn a lot of interest, and thank you all. Most of you have probably heard about that. So there will be a lot of ballot measures, interestingly enough, and I have just kind of a short list, but some of them are pretty interesting related to tolling of the roadways in the Portland area to help pay for bridges and things like that. But just some other things that have kind of made their way into ballot initiatives that I thought were legislative quorum requirements and some more campaign finance reforms and a bill and initiative that would allow distilled spirits to be sold in grocery stores. So there you go. Always happy to answer questions if you guys have them. If I don't know the answer, I know where to find them. So, but I figured I would just let you know nothing hair on fire happened for transit in the session. So we can all rest assured that we'll continue, you know, business as we've known it for a while. So I'm happy to answer questions if you have any.
Any questions for Tiffany?
That must mean that I did such a good job telling you all of the information. You had no questions, which is fine.
That's usually how it goes. Awesome.
All right. Well, you know where to find me if you have them.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Tiffany. Okay, we are going to welcome over, and we're more or less right on time. Cosette and Jake for the department overview presentations about customer and specialized services, transit operations, public safety, and transit training. And so we have until essentially 6:10 for this agenda item before we need to move into executive session. So welcome, Jake. Good to see you.
Let me kick this off just so I can tell the board why. So there's been a board have been asking to kind of better understand, you know, what the different departments do, what the purposes are, get to know the directors a little better. So as we're having time in the agenda, we're having over the next few months, we'll have our directors talk to the board, let them know they're part of the organization, what they do, how they work, what their responsibilities are, and give you a chance to kind of get to know them a little better or ask any questions. So.
Thank you. So with that, I'll jump in. So it's a short presentation outlining departments I oversee and how some of the day-to-day things get accomplished. I know everybody's familiar with this screen. Today, I will draw attention to our mission, connecting our community. The operations department delivers the end product. We live our mission because it's what we do every day, much like our accessible service side. We get people to where they need to go and play a significant role in many lives that may otherwise struggle without our service. Next slide. So these are the three departments I oversee and support: transit operations, public safety, and transit training. Wow, it looks like I need to update my picture. I'm wearing glasses and I have way more white and gray hair. That's what 2 years of the pandemic, I guess, does to somebody. But anyway, these are the three departments I oversee. Next slide. So the department description, transit operations includes the operators who drive our fixed route and MX buses, their supervisors and trainers, public safety staff, and administrative specialists. Together, the team makes sure we provide smooth, safe service and an exceptional customer service experience. Transit operations currently consist of 14 supervisors. Seven of these supervisors are focused on office-related duties and are referred to as office supervisors. The other seven supervisors are referred to as field or road supervisors. These positions directly support operations and everyday functions, including accident investigations, detours, video processing, projects, special service, charters, supervision over the bus operators, emergency response, and the list goes on. All of our current supervisors started their career as bus operators. This means they have firsthand experience regarding expectations and what it's like to be an operator. Supervisors are typically selected through a temporary supervisor program that utilizes bus operators to learn what supervisors do and decide if this is a career path they may like. Bus operators are paid a premium above their wage when performing the duties of the temporary supervisor. The number of temporary supervisors is subject to the district needs and is not related to the collective bargaining agreement. There is an additional cost associated with this process, and I will mention that when we cover the transit training department. Our succession plan is very successful in this department, and we are proud to support internal growth in our employees and our frontline staff. Public safety assures a safe and comfortable transit system for passengers, employees, and the public by monitoring safe security measures and engaging in proactive customer service to create an environment that promotes positive behavior. This group also coordinates physical and electronic access control for district facilities to protect our people and our assets. Public safety currently consists of one manager and nine public safety officers with a current budget of 9.5 public safety officers. Our officers work hand in hand with the operations supervisors to cover our service area. Public safety officers are part of the ATU and also have a collective bargaining agreement. This department may also work with local law enforcement to coordinate investigations, video evidence, and support both in-person and behind the scenes. Officers are provided patrol vehicles and have the ability to respond to any situation in the system at any time during work hours and support frontline employees and transit operations supervisors. Transit training work group coordinates robust training opportunities, educational support to district employees for professional growth and development. The work group develops and delivers relevant training programs to maintain state and federal requirements, evaluate training needs throughout the district, and provide corrective training practices to maintain national safety standards. The Transit Training Department has its own dedicated supervisor and an assistant supervisor overseeing day-to-day operations, project, district training, and individual training needs. So how do we train our operators to make sure they're up to speed on all aspects of their jobs? We utilize our own operators as instructors. We currently have 18 instructors who perform various duties. Some instructors specialize in specific areas, for example, CDL testing. LTD currently has its own dedicated staff member certified through the DMV to conduct CDL testing. We currently have instructors that provide both on-route training and classroom training or specialize in one of these areas. While there are many benefits to having instructors that are also bus operators, other factors can be challenging, like taking them off their daily work to perform instructor duties. This requires another operator to take their place on the bus. Obviously, there is a cost associated with this, resulting in a higher cost per hour. Instructors get paid an additional premium per hour when performing their duties. This is the same process for the temporary supervisors. Next slide, please. Here's the current organizational chart. As you can see, I currently have 5 direct reports. This includes 2 department managers, 2 administrative specialists, and 1 project coordinator. Operations manager Brian Penn oversees our supervisory team and is responsible for day-to-day supervision of the department. This is also the same for public safety. Frank Wilson is the public safety and systems security manager. Both managers are required to meet with me and discuss opportunities to support departments and provide departmental updates. Collaboration and communication is key. We work together to support frontline employees and make sure we are constantly supporting the community. This allows us to provide the best internal and external customer service possible. Next slide, please. Bus operators are the frontline employees who provide our vital service to our community. We strive to provide a safe customer service focused experience to our riders in the community. We are currently staffed at around 175 bus operators. 14 of the 175 are still training and are expected to graduate this month. As you know, the recruiting and hiring process has had many challenges this past year in our industry. To maintain our service level commitment, bus operators have worked overtime and on their days off. Fortunately, sunny days are ahead. With the addition of the 14 operators, we will be at a level of service that can be consistently supported and not fueled by excess overtime and extra hours. Now, we do live in Oregon, so while the forecast calls for sun, it doesn't mean things won't change. Operators are the largest group of employees, and therefore our numbers are constantly changing for various reasons. This includes, but isn't limited, service demand. Service increases require the number of operators to change or an increase in overtime. We are required to have a minimum of 3 bids per year. This not only provides the district the opportunity to address service needs, but gives the operators the opportunity to change work based on their seniority, retirements, promotions, job changes and separations or other factors that affect our numbers of operators. So how do we respond? Pretty simple, we hire. Hiring qualified bus operators is time consuming. After the recruitment process, it takes about 8 weeks from the day you start to graduation. We have a great training program that historically is very successful. As you can see, the timeline for hiring and training definitely affects the frontline employees when operator numbers suddenly drop. Next slide, please. So I wanted to briefly mention a few items related to our fiscal year 23 budget. The first one being service level. We talked about this a little bit already. Our current level of service, it's adequately supported by our current number of operators. This allows us to address the need for adjustments and recruitment in the next fiscal year. We're not anticipating large shifts in service, so we feel that we're going to be able to take a proactive approach. The second thing I'll mention is bus uniforms. During the last year, the district has relaxed the uniform policy to allow bus operators to work in a more comfortable environment when sanitizing and cleaning buses and frequent contact surfaces. Another factor is the availability of uniform items. Like many things, timelines have changed due to the effect of the pandemic. From the time we order, arrival times have doubled, in some cases tripled, and that's even if we can get the item. The contracts for the uniforms are expiring this year. We will be looking at some necessary changes that have been identified for future contracts. LTD must supply bus operators with their uniforms as per the CBA. Last thing I'll talk about briefly is paper usage. It's another initiative that we're looking at. Operations would like to make a significant improvement on our paper usage in the department. Unfortunately, the operations department has been the top department in the use of paper. The bulk of paper used in the is information for operator bids and time cards, typically three service chains, like I already mentioned, holiday bids and yearly operation vacation bids are big contributing factors. As our department aligns with the strategic business plan and our commitment to sustainability, we're excited to improve this number through technology and improvements associated with the remodel of the Operations Command Center and Eugene Station improvements. Digital display boards were identified to help with the department's overall paper usage and communication tool to help with getting real-time information to operators. And last slide, please. The three departments I oversee are staffed primarily by frontline employees represented by the Amalgamated Transit Union, or ATU. The relationship, partnership, and communication between the district and the ATU is a vital component to the success of the district and living our commitment to the strategic business plan and our mission, vision, and values. Hopefully this has provided a brief, but sorry, I had a bus operator making faces at me at the window. Anyway, hopefully this provides a brief but informative description of operations, public safety, and transit training. And with that, I'm open to any questions, and hopefully I left a little bit of time for Cosette.
Okay,
go ahead.
Not a question, but just as a regular transit rider, I just want to say you guys in the operations do a really good job, and I'm really impressed with the quality of the customer service that our operators do. I just today had a guy who was trying to be really, really helpful to me. I didn't realize it was a different bus than it was. But he was did it with a smile of as much as you can with a mask on. And so I just want to say you guys are doing a great job.
Thanks, Pete. We appreciate it. All right.
Thank you, Jake. Thanks for the presentation. And you said Cosette is there. She is.
I was just going to say thank you to all the operators on our behalf for the Appreciation Day. Thanks for joining us.
All right. And Cosette, you've got 10 minutes.
All right. Can you hear me now?
We can.
And can you see my screen?
We can.
Excellent. Thank you.
It is in presenter mode, though. It is not in the other mode. I'm forgetting what it's called right now. There we go.
Wait. Can you see it okay?
Yes.
Okay. I can't do that.
There. Perfect. Did it. Oh.
Hang on. Sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
Somebody came and helped me.
Oh, Zed, I do have that up in the background on my end. Would you like me to pull that up and just share it for you?
Yes, please. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Sorry about this, everyone. All right. Perfect. Thank you, Camille. So good evening. My name is Cosette Reese, and I'm the Director of Customer Specialized Services. I'm super happy to be here this evening and share with you all the great work of the Customer Specialized Services team and how we live and deliver on our mission, vision, and values every day. Next slide, please. You've all seen this many times, our mission, vision, values. This is our North Star guiding us. A bit of context, the North Star has been used for guiding ships because it holds nearly still while the entire northern sky moves around it. That creates a constant. That regardless of what is happening around it, if a navigator focuses on that North Star, they will always arrive in their harbor. The Customer Specialized Services team, like the rest of our organization, keep our mission, vision, values in our focus. We refer back to it regularly to ensure we're on course, reflecting and living the spirit and intent of this commitment. Next slide, please. The Customer Specialized Services team is comprised at a high level of our accessible services and our customer service work groups. I get to work with a team who truly believes in and puts their heart into everything they do. Let's take a moment to learn about this amazing department. Next slide, please. This is our customer service team. We're located at the Eugene Station and we're available to provide support and information 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Our goal is literally to connect people. We connect by providing tools to independents, information to use LTD and other transportation services. We manage the UMO electronic fare collection system. We collaborate with nonprofit organizations in our community to provide much needed bus passes at a 75% discount to access jobs, training, and services. We provide tips to help make public transportation less daunting and overwhelming and instead make it a welcoming experience. We reunite people with lost items. Everything from the common cell phone and umbrella to the less common Santa suit and prosthetic leg. Thanks to a committed organization, we have many tools at our fingertips to help individuals learn to use our system successfully. The most important tool, though, isn't what LTD provides. It's what our representatives bring with them that makes them special. They take it in, they listen, they hear and ask questions. They're patient and they care. They meet our customers where they are. We fulfill their needs to the best of our ability and give them the confidence. When needed, we take them by the hand and we help them know that we got this, that they've got this, and that we're here to assist. Next slide, please. A few notable highlights over this past year. Since COVID began almost 2 years ago, it significantly changed how LTD delivered our services. Some of those changes affected service on the street, the where and when the service operated, as well as new processes to help keep our customers and operators safe. Throughout COVID, CSC staff showed up every day to ensure customers had the most up-to-date information in a rapidly changing environment while doing their best to connect residents to the destinations to meet their needs. After a pause in fare collection to allow people to board through the rear doors, we resumed collecting fares using our new UMO system. This included fully implementing the program through partnerships with our community, including the K-12 pass in cooperation with our school districts, and moving our U of O and LCC passes from visual validation to electronic validation. Next slide, please. Looking forward to the coming year, we have projects planned to build on and improve on the customer experience. This includes replacing the aging software to gather and respond customer feedback in a timely manner, installing fare validators on our MX system to provide useful information and insight on how people are utilizing the busiest part of our system. We are planning to create a more seamless travel experience by partnering with other agencies to implement the UMO fare collection system to a broader network such as Link Lane, Diamond Express, and Rodie Express. And the Eugene Station is now 25 years old, and a lot has changed. We're looking forward to modernizing the features, providing a comfortable and functional space to last us for the next 25 years. Lastly, the public transportation industry loves to raise all the boats by showing off the latest and greatest. As we're opening up, we're looking forward to visiting, exploring, and sharing best practices, new and tried and true. Next slide, please. Our accessible services team also work to connect our community. As you're aware, LTD was the first transit agency in the nation to have a fully accessible fixed route fleet 5 years before it was required under the Americans with Disabilities Act. This occurred because LTD was and remains committed to accessibility. We practice a philosophy of universal accessibility by innovating and investing in equipment and services that serve and welcome our diverse community. Examples of this are low floor boarding, making it easy for everyone, including people using mobility devices, baby strollers, or just walking on to board. Another example is our unique paw print program, providing a photo ID with a blue paw print, indicating that this individual has spoken with LTD staff and they are someone who may be riding with a service animal, thus eliminating the need to provide explanation as they're boarding the bus while making the experience more welcoming. Next slide, please. One charge of Accessible Services Workgroup is to manage programs and services that allow our community to connect to services that improve accessibility and quality of life. I'm not gonna go through these because I know we're running short on time, but these are some of the programs that we are in charge of. So next slide, please. One of the biggest programs managed by this group are the operations of our RideSource call center. Since John gave an excellent presentation earlier this month about RideSource, I'll move on. Next slide, please. Like our customer service work group, our accessible services group has continued to build on our strengths over the past year and really since COVID began. During COVID, our team found innovative ways to safely provide trips while experiencing capacity issues. We had to be really creative to meet the needs of our customers, while some of our partner providers had to pause service due to COVID outbreaks. We also experienced long lines and wait times for drive-through COVID vaccines. We were fortunate to work with Lane County to help facilitate getting our vehicles in and out efficiently to get us back on the road to further serve our community. Medicaid is by far the biggest program served through RideSource. This year, we were successful at renegotiating our contract for our administrative costs to provide an EMT service, reflecting rising costs and increased compliance. We're in the process of moving our Novus software that's used to manage our RideSource operations to the cloud. We're also implementing three new modules to allow for more self-service and convenience for our customers, as well as provide us accurate on-time performance. Next slide, please. In the coming year, we're planning to complete a stem-to-stern analysis of our RideSource operations. The programs and operations supported through the call center continue to evolve. This evaluation of the programs, structure, and processes will help to guide decisions and priorities, gain efficiencies, improve services, and position us for future changes. As John covered in the work session, we'll be putting out an RFP for the contract for our RideSource service operations. And LTD has been working to develop strong collaborative relationships with partner agencies. One of the outcomes of these partnerships is identifying opportunities to partner on projects in a way that allows us to strengthen and leverage our collective limited resources to best meet the transportation needs of our community. One example of this is coming up this year as LTD and our advisory committees create the formula plan as the qualified entity for the STIF Formula Fund program, reflecting new requirements with the consolidation of the special transportation programs. Next slide, please. While customer service and accessible services is included in the title of my work groups, these commitments are embedded and reflected in the values and practice of our entire organization. Using my previous analogy, this philosophy is part of our guiding North Star. As long as we remain steady and use this to light our path, we will arrive in safe harbor. That's all I have.
Thank you, Cosette. What questions do we have? I don't see any hands raised at the moment, Cosette. So I think we'll just take a moment to say thank you so much for that overview and sharing a bit more about what you do and what your department does. And we love hearing about that. So thank you for taking the time to put that together.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Great. Well, we are still on time. Good news for everyone. So thanks, Cosette. So what I'm going to do now, board, is just read something really quick. So for everyone in the audience and all the LTD staff members, so the board of directors will now meet in executive non-public session, which is pursuant to ORS 192.662E to conduct deliberations with persons designated by the governing body to negotiate real property transactions. So there's a separate Zoom webinar link that's been provided under separate cover to the representatives of the news media, the board, and the designated staff allowed to attend the executive session. Representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on any of the deliberations during the executive sessions, except to state the general subject of the sessions as previously announced. No decision may be made in executive session. So this executive session is expected to last approximately 30 minutes. The meeting will adjourn at the conclusion of the executive session, and we will not return to public session. So board, as soon as I say these final words, you are gonna leave this meeting and go to your email to the new Zoom link that was provided to you. Okay, everybody got that? Okay, so this public session is now adjourned.